Welcome in to the Team 980. We're always live and free on the Odyssey app. You can check us out on the iHeartRadio app as well as the TuneIn app. Tapped into the youngest in charge, Noah Willingham, sitting in for our guy Chris Russell. I believe the Rooster is back with you all coming up on Monday, but we got a lot to get to. I was live, boots on the ground in Ashburn this morning for the second day of full pads for the Washington Commanders. And let's just say today's practice was a lot better for the offense than it's been for the past couple days. I would go as far as to say this was probably one of the best practices of camp for the offense. So we'll break it all down as you roll throughout the program here. A couple of guests wow, things are dropping and popping all over the studio. It's hot as hell in here. After going out to camp this morning,
yeah,
and being in the elements and then coming in here, it is, like, brutal.
Yeah.
But we're rocking and rolling here on the Team 980. A couple of guests going to stop by the program. Dan Graziano, a longtime ESPN NFL insider, going to join us coming up in about 15 minutes. He was out there at practice this morning as well. And we'll ask Dan Graziano about some comments that he made earlier this morning during his Get Up hit on ESPN. He was out there in Ashburn today, as I mentioned, and the holding in for Terry McLaurin continues. He came out on the practice field right at the tail end of practice, and all you hear is Terry, Terry, Terry. And you look behind, and there is one Scarence Terrence signing autographs, kissing babies, doing the whole bit. I didn't see Buddy Baker out there this afternoon. Not sure what that was about. I may have just missed him because I was, late night for your boy. Quick turnaround. Maybe I wasn't the sharpest today as I would have wanted to be. But, this saga is going to continue. I think it continues to drag out. What we'll talk about here in this opening hour is what options do the Commanders have here? Because he's under contract. They want him to come in and play, obviously. But realistically speaking, are there legitimate options here for the Washington Commanders and how they can move forward with Terry McLaurin? So we'll talk about that as we roll throughout this opening hour as well. It is also Major League Baseball trade deadline day. The Washington Nationals already a little busy making some moves. Kyle Finnegan shipped out to the Detroit Tigers. They made a move yesterday as well, and we'll continue to break it all down for you as the news comes in here, as we're about 5 hours away from the MLB trade deadline. And look, if you're a Nats fan out there trying to find a silver lining about this trade deadline and what this year has been, according to sources, and I was reading this online, Mike DiBartolo has gotten no sleep over the past couple of days, super hard at work trying to figure out how he can retool this group on the fly and potentially get some good prospects in here and really add to a farm system that quite realistically is just lacking. Other Commanders news that we'll get to here throughout the show. RFK 2.0, the vote for that is set for tomorrow. The first vote is set for tomorrow. One thing we'll touch on as we roll throughout the program, what event are you most excited to host at RFK 2.0? We'll take your calls on that at 301-230-0980. We didn't get to it yesterday, but we will get to it here this afternoon, because I am a Madden mark. Madden 99 Club was revealed Monday. Madden rankings, top 10 in each position, came out this afternoon. And you'll be quite surprised as to where the folks at EA Sports had Terry McLaurin ranked amongst the top wide receivers in the game. We'll also let you know where they ranked Jaden Daniels. So plenty of burgundy and gold conversation getting weaved in throughout the next 3 hours. We'll hand things over to the DOC, Rick Doc Walker, coming up at 4 o'clock. But also, I screwed this up last night on The Fan, and I don't think I mentioned it at all when I was sitting in here yesterday. Guys, we can stop scratching the itch. We'll get the itch scratched tonight, I guess is the best way to put it. Football is back. Hall of Fame game coming up tonight, 8 p.m. Eastern time. You get to hear Mike Tirico, Chris Collinsworth in the Sunday Night Football booth. Super excited for that. It was announced yesterday. Trey Lance going to get the start for the L.A. Chargers. And It's honestly, look, I'll probably be tuning in and out of it as I'm over there on the Fan tonight. And I'll be flipping back and forth between that and whatever the hell else is on TV. I don't care how the game goes. I'm just excited to see football. Like, realistically speaking, I don't care how the game goes. I just want to see football. And it's Chargers and Lions. It's kind of intriguing when you think about the matchup and the two quarterbacks that are going to get to play. Trey Lance, a failed top five pick at the quarterback position. And I believe Hendon Hooker is going to get the start tonight at quarterback for the Detroit Lions. And when you think about what he was during his college football career at the University of Tennessee, if Hendon Hooker doesn't tear his ACL, Hendon Hooker probably a first-round quarterback back in the class of 2023. So super excited to see those two cats on full display. And most importantly, just excited that we're getting football back. So really, really cool moment for that. I want to give you some training camp standouts from today. Like I mentioned, I was out there, boots on the ground, for the second fully padded practice of this offseason. And I'll be very real with you about what today was. I mean, look, the offense got jiggy, right? We saw the run game really pop. Ja'Cory Kroski-Merritt, probably one of the bigger standouts from today's session. He just gets it. He just got it. And look, I still am in wait and see mode with him, right? Preseason, obviously going to be big for him. The joint practice is going to be big for him. But today, you felt his burst. You felt his explosiveness. When you talk about some of the jump cuts and how quickly he gets downhill, there is not a lot of wasted movement with Bill, Ja'Cory Kroski-Merritt, the seventh round running back that the Commanders took this past April. He is a dude that, to this point, like, it's early, but I think he's got a legitimate shot of not only making this 53-man roster, but being a significant contributor. Another standout from today, gotta be honest, Zach Ertz. And honestly, today was a reminder of just how special Zach Ertz was last year for this football team. His ability to, you know, be a safety blanket for Jaden Daniels, I think, is super underrated and undervalued. They did a lot of red zone work today. And you think about where Zach Ertz had his biggest impact this past year, it was in the red zone. So seeing him work was awesome. Him and Will Harris have had a nice little battle going on throughout training camp. And Zach Ertz, for the most part today, got the better of Will Harris. Look, Zach Ertz is not that fast, guys. But his understanding of angles and leverage is really the big reason why he's been able to have success at this point in his career and why last year was so successful for him. Like, this cat can play. Going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer. And, you know, going into the offseason, there wasn't, you know, a whole lot of certainty for me as to whether or not he was going to be brought back or not. Now, I feel like with Ertz, and for this offense as a whole, now this is looking at things through the lens of, yeah, we ain't going to have Terry, or Terry's going to be slow to get involved. One way that the Commanders can supplement the loss of Terry McLaurin, if they do, or if he does hold out into the regular season, and one thing you can do, you know, in lieu of Terry McLaurin being there, like, you can do it whether he's there or not, they're going to use more 12 and 13 personnel than we saw last year. And they played 12 and 13 personnel quite a bit, right? When I say 12 personnel, I'm talking about two tight ends. When I say 13 personnel, I'm talking about three tight ends. That package for them is interesting. We've seen them have some success with it. We saw them have some success with it on Sunday as well. When you talk about, they're going to run the football. It's a big part of this offense. They had the sixth highest rush percentage in all the National Football League last year. So it's what they do. It's a part of Cliff Kingsbury's offensive identity. But the thing that we didn't see a ton of last year is them throwing out of those 12 and 13 personnel sets. The reason I bring it up, Ben Sinnott. a guy that was a second-round pick a year ago. A lot of folks have high expectations for him and what he could be in year number two. I think unless Zach Ertz gets hurt, I don't know how many opportunities he's going to get. But maybe, just maybe, and we've seen it, you know, a fair amount here at camp, they're going to run 12 and 13 personnel. That gets, you know, Ben Sinnott on the field. Now, last year when they ran 12 personnel, it was John Bates and Zach Ertz. I wonder how much improved Sinnott is as a blocker to where maybe he can eat into some of John Bates' snaps on or in those 12 personnel sets. The other thing that I also think is kind of like an indictment of Ben Sinnott is the fact that they re-signed John Bates this year for $7 million per. Like, he got a pretty hefty contract to come back when you consider his role as one of the better blocking tight ends in the National Football League. I don't know how much of an endorsement that was of Ben Sinnott and what he could potentially be here in year two, but it's going to be interesting to see. Zach Ertz, though, a huge standout from today's practice. Another young rookie stood out this afternoon as well. Jalen Lane. Woo-wee. Now, the phrase I'm going to use to describe what Lane has done here over the past four practices, if you're somebody that covers NFL training camp year in, year out, it's kind of like a roll-your-eye phrase. Jalen Lane's stacking days. He has had now four really good days in a row. Today, the best of them. Had a 60-yard bomb from Sam Hartman. He had a couple of really nice routes out of the slot, making contested catches. He was able to work in the red zone really well, showing off short area quickness. There were times where he didn't even get the ball, but he's losing his defender. And I paid very close attention to him today. The one thing that I have a question mark with Jalen Lane, I think he's got all the speed in the world. The play strength, right? Can he consistently get off of press coverage, right? Can he compete and be enough of a factor in the screen game to where you don't have to take him off of the field? Can he be enough of a factor in the running game in terms of competing on the perimeter and blocking? Like, that's the big question mark with him. I think he can run all the routes. And today that really stood out. Like, he's got – I feel like he was viewed and billed as a deep threat only. That's not what he is. He's got route running nuance. And honestly, you know what it reminds me of? The irony of all this. He reminded me of Terry in year one in terms of, like, you didn't really know what you had in him. You knew you were going to get special teams contributions at the least. But I also feel like, as a route runner, Jalen Lane's got some stuff to him. Jalen Lane's got some stuff to him. The big question is going to be play strength, and, like, this goes even deeper than play strength, toughness. How tough is Jalen Lane? And if my conversations with his wide receivers coach out of Virginia Tech, Fontel Mines, if any of those conversations are genuine and real, which I know they all are, Jalen Lane, tough as nails. Football background, father was a coach, so he is going to get it. For those of you that are, like, looking for, like, guys that have stepped up, minus Terry McLaurin, today it was a lot of Jalen Lane. KJ Osborne made some plays. Michael Gallup made some plays. Noah Brown did not practice, so we didn't see him a lot. And then Luke McCaffrey had mixed bag day. The ball's hit the turf too many times when it's been intended for Luke McCaffrey this training camp, for my liking. Not writing him off, not saying he's buns, not doing any of that. I'm just saying he hasn't had the best camp to this point. Hadn't really done anything to flash or put himself over. 301-230-0980 is the number. I'll continue to roll through my training camp standouts from this afternoon's session. Plus, I'll give you a full training camp recap from practice number 7 as we roll throughout the show. When we come back, though, we'll be joined by ESPN NFL insider Dan Graziano. He was out there at practice today. We'll get his thoughts on what he was able to see. Plus, we'll ask him what is next when it comes to this contract negotiation between Terry McLaurin and the Washington Commanders. All that and more coming up next here on the Team 980.
That really kind of aren't. And look at the DK Metcalf example. This is a guy they liked in Seattle, but the price on him, the contract he was going to want, is beyond what they thought he was worth, or maybe even what they thought any wide receiver might be worth. So he ends up getting traded. Now, I'm not saying Washington is in that camp, but there are some teams that would probably be willing to compensate Terry McLaurin at a higher level than Washington has been so far. I don't get the sense that they're interested in trading him, but Adam makes an interesting point. That gets to the issue of how different teams see this differently. Pittsburgh was willing to give DK Metcalf $33 million a year. Seattle didn't want to talk about it.
Stan Graziano, longtime NFL ESPN insider. Excuse me, ESPN NFL insider. He was out there, boots on the ground in Ashburn this morning for practice, and he joins us right now on the guest hotline. Make sure you give him a follow on the X app at Dan Graziano ESPN. Dan, we appreciate you making some time for us, brother.
Yeah, my pleasure. How you doing?
I'm good, man. So I didn't get to – I just listened to your hit from this morning on Get Up, and I think you hit on a very interesting point that I know a lot of folks here locally are not willing to get to yet because Terry is obviously such a beloved figure here in the nation's capital. So I'll start right off with this. Where are we at right now in this negotiation, I guess, between Terry and Washington? And from your perspective and folks that you've talked to, is there an end in sight? Or do you think this thing drags too close to the regular season, maybe Labor Day weekend?
Yeah, I mean, someone's going to have to radically change their position. And so it's like, how dug in are the Commanders and how dug in are Terry McLaurin and his agent? And what's the pressure point where someone goes, okay, you know what, we'll come toward you a little bit and make some progress? Right now, it doesn't sound like any progress has been made in quite a while. And that there's a pretty big difference between what the team is willing to pay and what Terry wants. So, you know, we're seeing a similar situation in Cincinnati with Trey Hendrickson.
Yeah,
you start to – the team tends to hold the cards because it's very rare for the player to sit out real games. It happens, but it's very, very rare. And if you're Terry McLaurin, you're making $20 million this year, you divide that by – you know, 18, you miss a game,
right.
That's a lot of money that you're leaving on the table there. Now, if you're willing to do it, then that gets the team's attention and maybe helps your case. But until we get to September, 7th or whenever the first game is, and he's not there, then the team is justified in saying, you know what, we'll stand firm and wait for you to come to us.
Gross, the thing that's interesting to me is, like, you were out there today. I mean, we didn't see them throw the ball a ton, but, like, today was one of the better practices the offense has had, Dan. Like, it's been, you know, rough sledding, especially trying to get completions on the perimeter outside the numbers and then pushing the ball vertically.
Yeah.
Guys just aren't coming down with the football. Washington can't afford to go into this season without Terry McLaurin, Dan. Like, that's the thing that I keep going back to is, like, we know Terry's dug in with the number he wants, but from Washington's perspective, I mean, it would be, to me, organizational malpractice for them to let this thing drag out into the regular season, and because now you're impacting Jayden Daniels and making his life harder going into year number two where you're actually playing a big boy schedule rather than the soft schedule they played last year.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with every word you just said, and I think that that is, if you're Terry McLaurin or his agent, that's what you're kind of counting on, right? Like, you have a practice where you're throwing to, because Noah Brown wasn't out there, right?
Right, Noah was out there.
A practice where you're throwing to Deebo Samuel and Zach Ertz. I mean, you know, good players, but they are not going to lead you to the passing game you want to have. And you're taking away one of Jayden Daniels' great strengths, which is his ability to throw deep and accurately. So, but there's no one on the other end of that pass. It doesn't really matter how accurate it is. And I think you're absolutely right. If Terry McLaurin can scare Washington into thinking that they would have to actually find a way to win games without him, then maybe they change their mind. But right now, I think they have a real sense of what they want to pay a 30-year-old wide receiver and for how long, and it does not match what he wants. And that's, you know, look, you saw after the practice today, right? He's out there signing autographs.
Terry,
fans are chanting his name, right? That's his leverage.
Yeah.
They love me. Your fan, don't mess with the vibes. They're good here for the first time in forever. So, like, let's keep this thing rolling. And so far, it hasn't worked. But as we get closer, maybe somebody does get scared.
So you said something earlier this morning that really, you know, caught my attention. I thought it was a very interesting point, and I want to know where you think Washington stands. The way you and Shefty kind of alluded to the fact that, like, there's a belief amongst, I guess, owners and front office execs across the National Football League that they're upset with how the wide receiver market has kind of exploded here. Based on what you know, with talking to folks in Washington, like, is that more of the situation here? Like, if Terry wasn't a 30-year-old wideout, would they be willing to give him a potential market resetting deal if he was 27 or 28? Or are they one of those organizations that maybe fall in that category of, look, I mean, with the prevalence of 7-on-7, like, you can get him a dime a dozen coming out of the draft in the first round. Why pay a guy $30, $40 million annually? Where do you think Washington stands on that?
Yeah, I think, you know, they're that first number being a 3 is difficult for some teams. Now, you're right, to your point, if they had Ja'Marr Chase, right? Like, the Bengals are like the cheapest team there is, and they gave out the biggest wide receiver contract. So maybe there are exceptions, but when you get to the point, this is an analytics-driven organization from the very, very top, right? So if they have data that shows 30-year-old wide receivers, you know, the you start to see decline, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, they're not going to deviate from their principles just because, you know, he's been a good guy.
Right.
That counts for something, but it doesn't count. Like, it doesn't count for $5 million a year. So if he wants more money than DK Metcalf got, which is 33 a year, right? And DK is a couple years younger than he is. If you give him more than 33, now you're Justin Jefferson's at 35.
Yeah. Like,
he's not Justin Jefferson,
right?
So So I think that's if I were to guess, which I have to because no one's really given out hard information. I would guess that Washington would probably be pretty comfortable in the very high 20s, and Terry wants it to be in the mid 30s, and that's a pretty big gap right now.
So let me also ask you this, Dan. I think I overheard you and Kime talking about this, and I think it's a...
you're eavesdropping.
Now, it's a very interesting point y'all made. The idea of, will Washington give Buddy Baker and Terry the opportunity to talk to other teams and see if they were willing to pay him? Do you see that being something that could potentially happen here?
I don't. I really don't. And we haven't heard it from Terry's end about, you know, that the clip you just played from Get Up this morning was off of Adam Schefter talking generally about, you know, the longer that Micah Parsons drags on, the longer that Trey Hendrickson drags on, the longer Terry McLaurin drags on, the more other teams start thinking about making a call. So Adam's not saying, you know, there are that Washington would consider trading him, but, you know, you would start to hear from teams. And certainly, like, once, for example, Seattle Seahawks figured out that what DK Metcalf was going to be asking for was beyond their comfort zone, then they start to talk about trading. But I don't get the sense that in Washington's case that that's on the table. I think, you know, the worst case scenario from their standpoint is play this thing out on the current deal and then see where things stand in a year. But I think they want him here.
Yeah.
He wants to be here. I believe they're willing to give him a contract extension. It's just not the one he wants, and so round and round we go.
Do you think we're at a point, Dan, where the relationship is starting to sour between the two parties, or is that not public information, I guess?
No, I don't get that sense. I mean, look, it is very much – it's very easy when you're in a contract negotiation – you know, I go through it, you know, like every few
years.
That's
why everyone has agents.
Like, it's very easy to take it personally, to start to get upset. Like, but that all goes away generally once the deal is done, right? Because you step back and you recognize this is just the process. And unfortunately, sometimes it gets a little, you know, icky.
Yeah.
But in the end, if everybody gets what they want or something close to it, then, you know, you go ahead. I mean, Terry McLaurin, he wants to play for the Commanders. He wants to catch passes from Jaden Daniels. Like, he's not going to retire over this.
Right.
So I think there's an outcome. There's a lot of making of the sausage stuff, right?
Yeah.
Like a month from now, he could be there and everything's fine and what were we all worried about? That's almost always how this thing ends.
Joined right now by ESPN NFL insider Dan Graziano. Give him a follow on the X app at Dan Graziano ESPN. The other angle that I'm looking at with this, Dan, is the fact that, you know, this Terry McLaurin last year had his breakout year with Jaden Daniels here. The Madden rankings came out today, Graz, and Madden has him as the sixth best wide receiver in the NFL. When you talk to executives and folks around the league, like, how is he viewed amongst the top pass catchers in football? Is he in that like second tier after a Jamar Chase and a Justin Jefferson, or do some folks view him in that light despite the age?
I think he's well regarded. I think he's given pass because of the quarterback situation right. in Washington that preceded Jaden Daniels' arrival. You know that. I'm not telling anything you don't know. But yeah, that's a good question. I think he's easily overlooked in some cases because he's a quieter guy.
Right.
And they haven't had a lot of success prior to last year, and he was a third round pick.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so that's not, you know, your draft status does stick to you a little bit in this league.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there are probably people in the league that, you know, passed on him and wish they hadn't, and maybe there's sour grapes about it, so they might underrate him a little bit. So no, I think he's regarded as a number one wide receiver, but to your point, they're not all created equal. I mean,
right.
Jamar Chase is and Justin Jefferson are doing things that, you know, others can't do, and then you look at, you know, I don't know. I mean, I think part of the problem is DK Metcalf getting $33 million a year. Like,
that's a big problem.
He's not that player. And they gave up a second-round pick and then gave him that contract because why? Because they knew they were getting Aaron Rodgers and they didn't want George.
See, Dan, that's why I look at it and go, okay, John Schneider's a very well-respected GM throughout this league. Just got an extension yesterday. If Schneider and company are going, hey, look, man, We love you, obviously. We drafted you, but we can't pay you that number. At what point do Adam Peters and company get there for Washington? Like, if this was – let me ask it to you this way, I guess, Gross. If they didn't have the you know, lightning-in-a-bottle season last year where they win 12 games and go to the conference championship, you think they would be more inclined, you know, to hear trade offers?
No, I think they would be more inclined to hear trade offers if they had drafted Jackson Smith and Jigba 2 years ago in the first round, like Seattle did.
Yeah, right.
I'm not
right.
kidding. I mean, like that's the point here. They don't have a replacement, and they are not here for a step back season. But Dan Quinn, when he was head coach of the Falcons, went to the Super Bowl in his second year.
Yeah.
Like, he's not of the belief that you need to build this thing slowly. So they need Terry McLaurin, and I don't believe, I mean, unless you were getting an equivalent player back for him, like let's say there was another disgruntled receiver somewhere out there that, you know, other than that, I don't know why they're, and even then, you know Terry McLaurin fits your culture. You know your quarterback likes him. Like, it just makes too much sense. I continue to think, while there doesn't seem to be any progress being made, and it looks like there's no light at the end of the tunnel, I just go back to, it's almost always works out.
Yeah, almost like, always.
Almost, literally, almost every time. And when it doesn't, it's usually an off-season thing. Like, you know, DK Metcalf got traded in March. AJ Brown got traded in April. Like, that's when these things happen, when you make those decisions. The fact that we're here the day before August and the Commanders, and he has not asked to go explore trades, and the Commanders have not put him out there in trades, that tells me that, you know, that they are not interested in having a season without him.
It also tells me, from McLaurin's standpoint, Graz, is that there's a date that him and Buddy Baker have circled of, all right, we're going to play hardball up until this point because we do want to get credit for this season and have the ability to hit free agency next year. But I look ahead, Graz, and obviously there'll be other wide receiver deals that, you know, help, you know, dictate the market, but when he does show up and say there is not a deal, do you see the franchise tag game getting sticky at the end of the year and heading into next offseason with this? Because Terry is hell-bent on his value, and I understand it totally when you look at the market at the position, and it seems like Washington's just as dug in here.
No, I don't, because the franchise tag is probably going to be over $30 million, and if they were going to do that, then they would just give him the contract.
Right.
Right? So, like, if they don't want to go over 30 on a contract, then why would they want to go over 30 on a franchise tag? So that's the way I look at that. I think, you know, you're telling the guy, like, this is what we think your value is. If he goes out and has a big year and proves you wrong and you win the Super Bowl, right, like, then maybe, okay, you either go, all right, you know what, we will reward that, even though it goes against what our data says we should do. But
yeah.
He's not going to be younger at this time next year.
No, he's not.
And so, right. So, you know, if anybody figures that out, please let me know. But it is, it is definitely, I think the best case scenario for everybody is they get to a deal and they find a way to extend him. But if not, and he plays it out, I find it hard to believe they'll be more inclined to give him $30 million a year next year than they already are.
Talking to ESPN NFL insider Dan Graziano. Dan, let's take a look at the division here for a second. I get in trouble on radio, Dan, when I say this, but give me your reaction to this statement. I think the gap between the Philadelphia Eagles and the Washington Commanders is bigger than the gap between the Commanders and the Cowboys. When I say that, what is your initial reaction?
Yeah, I mean, I can kind of see where you're coming from because the Eagles look awesome, and they were so good last year. And you can say, oh, well, they lost some guys on defense, and they did, but they've been drafting for years knowing when those guys were going to graduate out. So the Eagles on paper look like the best team in the league. They are the defending Super Bowl champions. They deserve all of that respect. Washington, sensational year, sensational quarterback, great people running the organization. You know, there's some stuff from last year that's going to be tough to do again.
Yes.
Like the fourth down rate was ludicrous.
Historically good.
The fourth quarter comebacks, yeah, record in close games. Like it's just so, I mean, if you do that again, then great. Or if you're good enough, if you've improved enough that you don't have to, then okay, fine. But I think you're fair to be, I think what you're saying is has some merit to it because I think the Cowboys have gotten better.
Yes, they have. That's my bigger point, is they've had a hell of an offseason to me.
I don't think it's unfair or disrespectful to say that Washington last year overachieved.
Yeah, for sure.
Right? Like, I don't think anybody saw it coming, and that was a wonderful run, and maybe they're going to be great. But I do look at that and go, like, yeah, they were in the game, the NFC Championship game, but they weren't really in that game, and to get back to it is going to be challenging.
We'll give you a couple of quick hitters around the NFL before we let you go, Graz. We appreciate you making some time for us, man. The Carolina Panthers, Bryce Young kind of came on at the tail end of last year after getting benched for Andy Dalton. If you could look into your crystal ball, Graz, are they going to be in the quarterback market entering next year?
I'm going to say no. I think Dave Canales is good at his job.
Yeah.
And Bryce Young is in a position to build on the success he had late last year. I think it's really quite a story. He only got his job back because Andy Dalton got in a car accident.
Right.
Which is think about that. And then, like, by the time Dalton was healthy enough to play, he was playing too well to sit him. So I think that represents, you know, a turning of a corner for him. And they've beefed up a little around him. That's got a chance to be a decent offense.
Yeah, it does.
And so, no, I would say that they go into next off. My prediction would be they go into next offseason feeling decent about Bryce Young.
From the NFC South to the NFC West, rave reviews coming out of Santa Clara about how Brock Purdy has looked fresh off of his new contract extension. They gutted this roster, though, Graz, to, you know, pay their golden boy. Does it pay off for the San Francisco 49ers, you think?
Yeah, I sort of disagree with the notion that they gutted the roster. I think, you know, once they paid Brandon Ayuk, they were always going to move on from Deebo Samuel. They weren't going to keep both those guys. Now, Ayuk, we don't know when he'll be back from his injury, and so that they're a little bit behind the eight ball at wide receiver. However, Juwan Jennings has emerged as a top performer, and Ricky Pearsall is a first-round pick from last year. So they do have it. They still have George Kittle. They still have Trent Williams. Fred Warner, Christian McCaffrey, Nick Bosa, like they are.
There's a lot of
really good players on that team, right? Who have been to Super Bowl and all that good stuff. So yeah, I think if Trent and Christian McCaffrey are both healthy, then that offense probably bounces back to something like what it was a couple of years ago. They can't afford any more injuries at the wide receiver position, but if Jennings is healthy and Pearsall is healthy and Ayuk is coming back at some point, I think that's it. You look at their schedule, it's tough to say, strength of schedule based on last year because not every team is the same as it was the year before. But
we know that here.
They don't play a lot of last year's playoff teams.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be something to monitor from the West to the AFC South. Cam Ward had some brutally honest comments yesterday about how the offenses look. Knowing what Stroud did in year one, knowing what Jaden did in year one, what type of chance do you give Ward to come resurrect the Titans next year?
I think solid. I mean, he's everything I hear about him seems to be that he's, you know, sort of wired for this, yeah. that he's capable of it. I think when you look at, you know, the issues that they've had in practice when they haven't looked great, it's been about like him getting his timing down with his receivers.
Right.
It's not about his processing ability. It's not about his decision making. It's not about his ability to diagnose. All that stuff is solid. He works his tail off. He's impressed the coaches with all the intangibles. So it's really just a matter of getting you know, on the same page consistently with Calvin Ridley, with Tyler Lockett, with, you know, all the guys that he's going to be throwing to. And I think that's the kind of thing that could look a lot better in a month. So, yeah, I think they have a shot to be a factor in a division that's not, you know, the strongest.
We'll let you go on this. The top threat to the Eagles in both the NFC and the AFC. Who are those two teams for you?
Oh, the top threat to the Eagles in the NFC. I still think Detroit.
Yeah.
Like, I know they lost the coordinators, but I was talking to Dan Quinn this morning about, like, last year and Jaden Daniels, and he said they wanted to build out a big offensive coaching staff because they thought, if we have success, people are going to want to take our guys.
Right.
And so let's make sure the coaching group around Jaden is large enough that if we did lose some guys, he's still familiar with who's left. I find that interesting because it made me think about Detroit and them losing their coordinators and the way Dan Campbell has done a very similar thing in terms of developing his coaches, making sure that, you know, these are still people that understand the program, that understand what they're all about, and that the players can connect with. So I do think that Detroit, you know, will maybe take a minute to adjust, but I still think they're very good. Campbell's kind of the key, and I think their defense has to be healthier than it was last year by default.
And then the AFC, who would that team be for you in terms of the biggest threat to Philly?
Oh, AFC. I mean, look, you know, Kansas City's won the AFC, you know, like they're the dominant team, and I think they've gotten better, so they deserve to be the favorite. I will say, I think this is the year where you could be looking at Buffalo as the one seed because they're stacked.
Yeah,
they're ticked off about how it ended again.
Yeah,
talk about a schedule. They only leave the Eastern time zone once all season.
Oh wow!
And they don't. And their list of opponents doesn't include a lot of last year's playoff teams either. So they're well positioned to maybe go in and get that bye for a change.
Dan, we appreciate you giving us some time as always, man. Good putting a name to the face, brother. Good meeting you earlier, man.
Well, I really appreciate you having me on, and it was nice meeting you as well.
Hopefully you give us some good juju here and we get this Terry thing done, man, because people are going crazy here in the nation's capital.
I don't blame him. I don't blame him.
That is Dan Graziano of ESPN. Make sure you give him a follow on the old X app at Dan Graziano ESPN. One of the absolute best. Talking all things National Football League. Wow. Really, really good, insightful conversation. A lot of good nuggets out of that. We'll react to the convo next. Plus, let you hear from Diana Russini of The Athletic, who had some very interesting nuggets about the Washington Commanders and their potential interest in trading Terry McLaurin. That is next here on the Team 980.
You still doing this bit, bro?
Am I still doing the bit? You've played nothing but Kendrick Lamar since 1 o'clock yesterday.
It's a great artist.
I am, like, baffled. 301-230-0980 is the number. Big shout out to our guy Dan Graziano of ESPN. If you missed any of that smashing interview, download the Odyssey app, use the Odyssey Rewind feature, and go back to 120. So much to unpack from that. I'll be straight up with you. And hey, Mac, you chime in on this as well because, well, first of all, thank you for the compliment, brother. Anytime you compliment me and tell me I did a good interview, it makes you feel good. I took my main takeaway from Dan Graziano was this. Both sides are dug in, and there's no end in sight, pretty much. But the week one, basically, the next time we should blink when it comes to this Terry McLaurin situation is week one. Because if he is willing to sit out games,
yeah,
then I think a different conversation needs to be had because I don't think they can, we had this conversation yesterday, they can function without him. It becomes much more difficult, and I begin to have my doubts about who they could be this year if he is willing to hold out in the games. But do you even think he's about it? Like, that's my thing. Like, is Terry McLaurin about it?
It seems like he is, and I have no problems with him being like, we've had callers call in and just talk about how he needs to shut up and basically take it, and I'm not in agreement with that at all. I think I'm just exponentially becoming more concerned the longer this is dragged out, because I thought this was – I'm with you where it's like you have a rookie quarterback going into his second year, like you – get the tackle, you get the slot receiver, you draft another tackle. You're building around this guy, and then you lose the number one.
The number one piece.
Yeah.
This most important piece, you just stripped him of it.
Yeah, so I was in the mindset of by any means necessary, like get the deal done, but it doesn't seem like the Commanders are in that same mindset, which leaves me a little concerned when it comes to Jaden having that number one piece.
Yeah, good point made by you. I don't know, AMAC. Like, this is – it just doesn't feel like there's no movement. Everyone's reporting that there's no movement. The two sides are way, way apart, way far apart. Buddy Baker being here in Ashburn, I'm almost starting to get annoyed by it. If you're here and you're still not making any progress towards the deal, go the hell home. I know he's got a client up in Baltimore. So, like, him being here locally, you know, you're checking in on your dude. All agents come out to training camp to see their dudes. It's what they do. But I don't know, man. I'm going to give you a percentage every day of whether I think it happens or not. Today, I'm 60-40. Yesterday, I was 65-35. Today, I'm 60-40. I think there's a 60% chance this gets done. It's all water under the bridge. I think there's a 40% chance that this gets messy and – he either, one, gets traded, which is like the terrible scenario for us as fans, or two, like I think he holds out into the date in which he can't hold out any longer. And I believe that would be like week 7. My whole thing is this too, is where to get tricky. When it comes to the list that he's on, If he's on PUP, going into the regular season, you have to miss the first month. You really think? If they don't have Terry McLaurin in those first 4 games, I can make a case they'll go 0-4. And can you bounce back from an 0-4 start? Doesn't happen. So, something's got to give here, man. And my other thing is this. Them placing him on PUP, I would love to know, like, the logistics of how that goes. The making of the sausage, as a lot of people try and describe it. Because it's like, okay, ain't no damn way that you did a physical exam on him and you found something wrong with his ankle. Because ain't nothing wrong with his ankle. So how do you then get off the list without getting paid? That's my whole thing. And the other thing, if he's on PUP, maybe it's them doing him a solid as an organization. Because if he's on PUP, they can't find him. So maybe, like, I don't know. But why would you want somebody around your building that you know you're not about to pay? And he's straight up telling you he's not playing if you don't get the bag.
See, and that's what makes me a little hopeful is like little signs like that. Him being on PUP, him still being there, like interacting with fans and things of that sort. I think both sides know how much they mean to each other. It's just financial, as Dan was kind of pointing out, which leaves me a little hopeful. But the fact that these numbers may be far away is like, eh.
I just don't get how we're about to be the 1st of August tomorrow. And Terry McLaurin, if you would have told me back in the spring that, like, by August 1st, he still wouldn't be in practice, and I'd just say, okay, trade him. First hour in the books, though. As I sit in for Chris Russell, you're tapped into the youngest in Charles and O. Willingham. Taking up to 4 p.m. before we hand things over to the DOC, Rick Doc Walker. A lot more to get to. Logan Paulson going to join the program coming up in about 50 minutes at about 2:45. When we come back, though, Diana Russini of The Athletic was on the Rich Eisen show earlier this morning and gave some pretty good nuggets into, you know, whether or not the Commanders are interested in trading Terry McLaurin or not. We'll let you hear from Diana Russini next. This is Team 980.